It is the 20th of August and also the 20th Sunday of Ordinary Time, which is great. I think that's fitting for some reason. But a couple weeks ago, we had the feast of, or the memorial of a saint named Saint Teresa Benedicta of the Cross. She was a Carmelite nun and a really amazing woman. She was born Edith Stein, and she was raised Jewish in an observant Jewish family, but she became agnostic. When she lived through World War I, just seeing suffering and seeing the brokenness of the world, brokenness of humanity, yeah, she became agnostic and just said, I don't know what to believe. She became a nurse later on and was caring for people. She actually went on to get her PhD in philosophy from the University of Freiburg, which is just amazing to think of this woman in the turn of the last century who is that driven to like just pursue the truth. At one point, she was staying after she had her PhD in philosophy, like just big brain kind of a person. She was staying at the house of a friend, and this friend had this book on the life of Saint Teresa of Avila, this other Carmelite nun. And Edith Stein, she picked it up. It was just Teresa of Avila's like story of her life. And she just started reading it. And she read it all through the night. And as the sun was coming up, she closed this book and she just uttered the words, "This is the truth." And that set her on this journey. She became Catholic, she was baptized. Later on, in 1933, she became a Carmelite nun and just dedicated her whole life to Jesus. Well, in 1942, what happened is, Nazism is spreading all throughout Europe. She, as well as her blood sister, Rosa, they were both taken into Auschwitz. And in August of 1942, Saint Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, her sister Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, and her sister Rosa were both killed in Auschwitz. And I was just looking at this woman's life, Edith Stein's life, Saint Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, the same person, and asked the question, like, what would mark her life? And of course, family was a really important part of her life, and so was war marked her life, and she's lived through World War I, died in World War II, suffering marked her life, her intelligence, I mean, this brilliant woman, her love of learning, her study, her knowledge, all those are good things. And I just kept thinking, though, I wonder, what is it, though, that is the thing that marked her life? And I was reading the first reading today is Isaiah chapter 56. And one of the first lines in Isaiah 56 is Isaiah says to the people, he says these two things. He says, observe what is right and do what is just. And the implication, of course, of Isaiah in this is he's talking to people who already know, right? Right? They already know what is right. They already know what is just. And so knowledge for those people that Isaiah was talking to, knowledge isn't the problem. Lack of knowledge isn't the problem. Yeah, I think that's for a lot of us too. Like when it comes to living, lack of knowledge of like what to do isn't the problem. I think from big things like faith to also just really small things. I mean, even when it comes to diet, everyone knows that McDonald's is not the best. It's not health food, right? We know that McDonald's is not health food. And we also probably know that if you've ever had McDonald's french fries, they taste really, really good. If you let them sit out for like an hour, they no longer taste any good. Why? Well, there's this doctor online. I'm not advocating online doctors, but this doctor who makes YouTube videos, Dr. Paul Saladino, and he actually went through this and he pointed out that McDonald's french fries have 19 ingredients in them. He points out that they should have three. It should be potatoes, tallow, beef tallow that you can fry these in, and salt. Those should be the three ingredients. There's 19 ingredients, and four of those ingredients are seed oils, which are not good for any human being to put inside their bodies. And yet that's what they have. In fact, he points out that it says natural beef flavor is part of the McDonald's ingredients, but that again doesn't come from tallow. What that comes from is wheat and milk in this strange combination that that's your beef flavor. In fact, the salt, even the salt that McDonald's uses in all of their products, has three ingredients. One is salt, the other is sugar, and the third is silico aluminate, which is basically an aluminum-filled kind of salt that we just taste and think, this tastes good, and yes, and it's not good for us. One of the things he points out that is in McDonald's French fries that I thought, this is strange. I don't know if I can enjoy this ever again. Is he says McDonald's French fries, one of the 19 ingredients is polydimethyl siloxane, which is basically a form of silicone that they use in Silly Putty as an anti-foaming agent that they put in the McDonald's French fries so that when they fry them, they don't explode essentially. And I think like, okay, I know that and I still want them. I've told this to many people over the last 4 weeks. That's when I first saw the little video. I'm like, did you know that there's 19 ingredients in McDonald's French fries? People are like, so? Because that's us, right? I mean, how many times, again, big things and small things, knowledge is not the problem, or lack of knowledge is not the problem. One of my favorite personalities online, favorite podcasts, favorite YouTube channels is Dave Ramsey. I love Dave Ramsey. And I not only just for myself, but also for our students who are trying to get out of debt, or maybe they don't have much debt, but they're trying to get themselves in a place where they're able to live like no one else, right? So they can give like no one else. They want to do things with their money to help people. Dave Ramsey is such an incredible counselor. And he even says this, he regularly points out that what he's teaching is not complex. That I've heard him say so many times is, people, this is sixth grade math. When it comes to making a budget, this is sixth grade math. It's not lack of knowledge. That's the problem. He says he knows this. He knows that the real issue is not the knowing. He knows the real issue is the doing. Because it's sixth grade math, but it's like fully grown decision making. And I think this is the reason why St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross is so amazing. That she encountered Jesus, she read the book, she encountered the life of Christ, and she said these four words, this is the truth. And then she allowed that truth to completely redirect and redefine her life. And I see her, I see how she acted, and I look at myself and I wonder, like, do I need more knowledge? Or do I need more courage? Remember Isaiah, he said, observe what is right, do what is just. And I have to wonder, like, I don't know if my problem is a lack of knowledge. I wonder if my problem when it comes to following Jesus is a lack of courage. In the last couple of weeks, we in our diocese, we put on a camp for middle schoolers, and it's run by high schoolers and adults, and it's great. This year, the theme was the virtues. In fact, the cardinal virtues. And so there are four cardinal virtues, just quick little recap. The first three cardinal virtues, justice, prudence, temperance. So justice is a little basic, just giving someone what you owe them. Like giving someone their due. That's first. That's justice. Prudence is when you know the goal and it's like practical wisdom, right? You know the goal and you take the wise steps to reach the goal. That's what it is to be prudent, not prudish, but it's like, okay, if I know where I'm supposed to be, I'm going to take those wise steps to get there. And temperance is very simply, it's doing the right thing at the right time in the right way, or using the right thing at the right time in the right way. So coffee is a good thing. The right time to drink it is not midnight, right? So doing the right thing at the right time, the right way, or using that right thing at the right time in the right way. Those are the first three cardinal virtues, justice, prudence, temperance. But the fourth cardinal virtue is I keep going back to our campers and to so many people. I think the fourth cardinal virtue of fortitude is possibly the most important of all the cardinal virtues. Why? Because fortitude is all of the other virtues when they're needed the most. I'll tell this to our campers and anyone who listens, that the reason why fortitude is so necessary is because it's easy to be good when being good is easy. Right? It's easy to be just and have that virtue when being just is easy. It's easy to be honest when being honest is easy. I mean, to think about how often it's easy to tell the truth when I know that, no, there are no bad consequences out of this. But to know that, oh, if I tell the truth in this situation, it's going to cost me something. That's when I need fortitude, right? That's when if I don't have fortitude, I won't be just or won't be honest. And then I have to ask, wait, am I just in the first place? If I can't be honest, when being honest is hard, am I honest at all? Like, if I can't be kind, when being kind is hard, how kind am I? If I can't be generous, when being generous is hard, how generous am I? Am I actually just? Am I actually honest? Am I actually kind? Or am I only kind when it suits me? Because that's not being virtuous. That just means I am having a good day, right? That just might mean I slept well last night. And I realize this is for all of us. And I need to be able to act on what I know. I need to be able to do what I know is good. Or else I'm a slave. Things get hard enough, I'm just back to being me. I need to be able to act on what I know, or I'm powerless. I'm just powerless. I think about that term powerless. If you've seen anyone who's powerless, there's the woman in the gospel today. In Matthew's gospel, this woman, the Canaanite woman, she is powerless. Why? Because she's not Jewish. She's coming upon Jesus, and she has there's no status in her life. And not only that, but she is stuck. Her daughter is possessed by a demon. And I just think that there's no way you could, on your own, deliver someone from possession from a demon. She is powerless. And all she knows is Jesus is here. That's all she knows. And she doesn't even know that much about him. I mean, if you follow the story in Matthew's gospel, Jesus, as he goes into this territory of the Canaanites, he hasn't done any miracles yet. He hasn't done any amazing signs or wonders. She calls him, she says, Lord, Son of David. I'm guessing she doesn't even know what that really, really means. All she knows is that this is a holy man, maybe even the anointed one of God. And that's it. She's powerless. And all she knows is that Jesus has some kind of power. And she acts on that. I think about this. I think what you and I know about Jesus would have dwarfed what she knows about Jesus. But the key, the difference between her and us is that she acted on what she knew. Because we know this, we know that knowledge without action is useless. Knowledge without action is useless. And in this moment, here's this woman who has fortitude. She knows a little, but she has so much fortitude. She has so much bravery. You know, fortitude has a couple different aspects to it. One is bravery. And bravery is nothing more, nothing less than doing the right thing in the midst of fear. Like doing the good in the face of fear. Like knowing what I need to do and then doing it regardless of my emotions, regardless of the danger that I'm facing. And that's what you and I are called to. If I know the next step I need to take, then how do I do it? That's the big question I ask myself. When I know that it's time to move forward, how do I do it? I sometimes stand still. I'm going to wait for life to come to me. I'm going to wait for this thing to come at me rather than running to the battle. Or even sometimes I'm tempted to sidestep the whole thing. When it's time to stand up, I'm tempted to sit down. That's when I just like probably all of us, need bravery. This fortitude that this woman has of like, here is Jesus, here is the chance, and I am going to call out after him. I'm going to act on what I know, because knowledge without action is useless. And I'm reminded of one of my guys from the Old Testament. His name is David. Remember that one of the early stories of David, after he gets anointed by the prophet, his brothers go off. They're going to fight against the Philistines. And you probably know the story that Goliath comes out, the champion of the Philistines, and he challenges the armies of Israel to a battle. But basically he says, we're not going to have armies come together and fight. Then a lot of people will die. How about this? We'll make it simple. I will fight on behalf of the Philistines. You Israelites, find one person who will fight on your behalf, and then we'll face each other. That way only one person gets killed. And if I kill him, then we win. And if he kills me, unlikely, then you win. And so he does this for 40 days. No one takes him up on this. No one is brave. No one sees this challenge. No one sees the reality that someone needs to do this good thing. Someone needs to fight. And no one does until young David shows up. And as the story goes on, you know, David's just like, what's going on here? And he volunteers, basically. And King Saul questions about this. It's an incredible story. But the part I want to highlight today is, as David goes into the battlefield, it says that he stops by this dried up riverbed, a wadi, and he picks up 5 smooth stones and he puts them in his pouch and he has a sling. And this line here, this is in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 48 and 49. It says, the Philistine then moved to meet David at close quarters. And this is the line. While David ran quickly toward the battle line in the direction of the Philistine. And in that part of a sentence, and David moved quickly toward the battle line in the direction of the Philistine. That's bravery. Again, when you and I are faced with like, okay, I know I need to move, but I'm just going to stand here and wait for the battle to come to me. Well, I know I need to move, I'm just going to sidestep. It's time to stand up, I'm going to sit down. I know enough to move. But I need to be brave enough to move. In so many parts of our lives, this is us. We know enough to move. We need to be brave enough to move. And of course, we could say, yeah, but I've tried that. I tried and I failed. I've tried and I've fallen. That's why another aspect of fortitude is not just bravery, a willingness to do the good in the face of fear, but another aspect of fortitude is perseverance. You know, in the gospel, going back to the gospel with the woman, the disciples say, send her away. She keeps on calling out after us. It wasn't like she was brave one time. She was brave again and again. She was rejected and brave again and again. She was dismissed and brave again and again. Here is this incredible woman who had not just bravery to do the good in the face of fear. She had perseverance. And what is perseverance? Basically, it's persisting in the good for a long time. And this is one of the things that's just so important for us. To have this virtue of fortitude means that we're going to persevere. Now, the temptation, of course, for a lot of us is, okay, I'm going to persevere. I'm going to be stubborn. So St. Thomas Aquinas, when he talks about virtues, He says there's always extremes, and the extremes we want to avoid, we always, the virtue lies in the middle. So one extreme of perseverance is stubbornness, or pertinacity is the fancy word that Thomas Aquinas uses. So stubbornness, and that's just thick-headedness. That is, I said I was going to do it, I'm going to do it, even if it's not the right thing to do anymore. We need to realize sometimes that, like, okay, I'm just doing this out of my own pride, my own ego. I'm doing this because people will think such and such of me, as opposed to I'm doing this because it's the right thing. Remember, perseverance is persisting in the good for a long time, not just stubbornness. The opposite extreme of perseverance is basically a fear of challenge. I'm going to shrink back because I'm afraid of the challenge, or I'm afraid of suffering, or I'm afraid of failure. That's why I look to this woman and think, oh my goodness, she's not afraid. She has this knowledge that Jesus is her only hope, and so she acts in bravery, and then she persists. And she needs to. She needs to persist in the good. And that's the thing about saints. Like, this is remarkable. This is coming to the end here. The thing about saints is that saints aren't saints because they had some kind of special willpower that you and I don't have. That's not what makes a saint a saint. Because holiness is not about never falling or never failing. Holiness is about trusting in Jesus. This woman, she knew that here is a holy man. That's it. Here's the anointed one. That's it. But she knew that she needed to trust in him. She needed to call out to him. And she needed to continue to call out to him. And that's us too, right now in this moment. She persisted and she needed to. I don't know the reason why Jesus has like these challenges. Like, I didn't come here for the lost sheep. I came here for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. I didn't come for Gentiles. And why he says, you know, the thing about the dogs and the scraps and all these kind of things. I'm not sure. Other than, I wonder if Jesus is doing something more in this situation. He wasn't just healing her daughter. He was doing something in her. That he was allowing her to grow in trust. That even being challenged, he was allowing her to grow in hope. That in not immediately responding to her, he was helping her to become even more brave, by helping her to be brave. Right? So as the more she had to be brave, the more she became brave. And I think that's you, and that's where you and I are as well. That here is God in this moment, and I have to ask myself, do I need more knowledge to do God's will, to observe what is just and do what is right? Do I need more knowledge, or do I simply need more courage? That I know enough to do the next step, to take the next step, to run to the battle line. I think too often I need to simply be brave enough to take the next step and to run toward the battle line. It's not an act of willpower. It is an act of trust. Saying, I will continue to call out. I will continue to move forward. I will continue to fight because I'm not moving forward alone. When I cry out, I am heard. And I'm not fighting alone. And you are not fighting alone. Jesus Christ is with you in the battle. He hears you when you cry out. And you know enough. Now it's time to be brave enough.